KVOE AM 1400, 96.9 FM. Welcome to the Central Care Cancer Center Friday edition of the Talk of Emporia for the month of July. And we're very pleased to be joined, as we always are, by Dr. Ali Wazir, medical oncologist and hematologist at Central Care Cancer Center. Dr. Wazir, good morning. How are you?
Hi, good morning, Ron. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. Good to see you again.
Yeah, yeah. How you been doing with the heat wave and everything?
Tell you what, heat is back on again, no doubt about that. So keep the fluid level up, right?
Absolutely. Very important.
Yeah, stay hydrated. So you've been busy at Central Care Cancer Center, huh?
Yep. Pretty busy. As usual, it's an ebb and a flow kind of deal. So I think this is a slightly more busier season, but it'll ebb and it'll flow again. So
yeah, we're very fortunate to have Central Care Cancer Center here. You can certainly log on to get more information online at cccancer.com. They're open Monday through Friday, 8 to 4:30, or you can certainly call 342-1117 for more information. Topic this month, interesting one, as we want to chat about the advancements in cancer treatment with personalized medicine and immunotherapy. So I guess first, Dr. Wazir, what is personalized medicine and how may this differ from traditional cancer treatments?
Yeah, these are clunky terms, unfortunately, oncologists aren't the best at marketing or coming up with terms. A lot of the terms have like overlapping meaning or the meaning changes. But basically the idea is that for personalized medicine is that, every cancer and every patient is unique in a sense. Cancer is not one disease. It's actually many hundreds of diseases that we kind of group together based on the organ system and what have you. And the idea is that, how about we kind of target this uniqueness of cancer and target it in multiple ways. So, when you say personalized medicine, the idea being that, there may be a way you can test the cancer or test the patient, certain characteristic of the patient, and based on that, come up with, targeted treatment. So okay. Even the word targeted treatment is kind of a misnomer in a sense, but the idea being that a certain cancer will have a certain mutation, and you give them a pill or something, and like a lock and a key, it will stop that cancer in the tracks by targeting. So I mean, that's at least the aspiration of the term. What it means in practice, the most cynical view would be that it is like a marketing term almost.
Yes.
For the drug companies maybe a little bit, but maybe what you could say is that this kind of revolution in cancer care in the last 15-20 years, where we have kind of moved past what we consider as quote unquote traditional chemotherapy, which basically all of the drugs in chemotherapy, no matter how they work, and they work in a myriad of ways, they basically target dividing cells. So fastly dividing cells, which are, cancer cells are fastly dividing cells. They're all targeted by traditional chemotherapy because, the way you target them is you're targeting the machinery that helps the cell reproduce, a cell to split from one cell to another cell, right? While personalized medicine or targeted treatment, basically you're targeting biochemical pathways which give the cancer an ability to propel itself. So that's kind of a long-winded way to kind of draw demarcation between the two things. But I just want to let the listeners and, Ron, that this is not as clear-cut as people make it out to be. This is, these are broad categories.
Sure, sure. So we've got genetic testing and biomarkers involved here in identifying maybe some of the most effective treatments for individual patients?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I think, that as a concept was very important, So, basically the story starts back in the early 90s. So there is this, some people would remember that from the 60s onward, Nixon administration onward, there's this thing called the war against cancer, and there's a lot of funding going in by a lot of philanthropy and stuff, and you know, all those years of efforts, basically, like, what it yielded was somewhat modest gains, you know, like, the NIH ran a program, in the late 70s, early 80s, that discovered most of our day-to-day chemotherapies, you know, whether it's paclitaxel or platinum agents or, you know, the later anthracyclines or, you know, the nitro-mustard derivatives. So basically what they did was that they were like, okay, we're going to try all known chemicals that probably have an anti-cancer role because they're known to, like, interfere with rapidly, dividing cells. And we're going to make a list of all these chemicals, and we're going to try all of them in trial, and we're going to discover new and new cancer therapies. So that effort, you know, basically ended up yielding us, you know, like 60, 70 chemicals that we use in different combinations for cancer therapy. But then there was a lull. You know, if you're very honest about it, if you look at the 80s, the mid-70s to the 80s, there was not any major, like, progress in cancer. You know, there were, like, a few bright spots here and there. We talked about testicular cancer, you know. But that they all kind of depended on, like, using these chemicals we already knew about in, like, new and novel combinations. Like, we just tried them in different combinations. And there were many, like, dead ends, you know, like, just to kind of, like, take people back, like, you know, how desperate the thing was. This one thing, it's called the STAMP trial, where basically they decided that, like, once they figured out that you could do what's called a bone marrow transplant, they start using it for almost every cancer, even breast cancer.
Okay.
Till it was shown that it didn't really do anything. You know, you caused a lot of toxicity without doing anything. So the concept back then was dose intensity, right? That if you can, the idea was that, like, if you give a high enough dose of chemotherapy agents, you will reach a point where you saturate the body to a degree that all the cancer cells will die. You know, and this is based on, like, mathematical studies from the NIH, where they looked at, like, log killing graphs. And the idea was that, like, if you extend the graphs, you know, and if you give a certain, like, theoretical amount of chemotherapy and it reaches the tissue, you'll reach a point where, you know, there'll be only a few cancer cells left and you could probably cure the patient, right? Unfortunately, like, the thing the graph don't, your line that extends the graph doesn't tell you is that you reach a point where, like, the human body cannot tolerate that amount of chemotherapy, right? Because it's just toxic, yeah. Like, you won't make it. So, you know, this called for a change in approach, right? And the change in approach basically was the discovery that, you know, a lot of cancers are driven by certain genetic processes, and that's where you got this idea of, like, the oncogene, you know, that there are certain genes that are normal part. We all have oncogenes, right? They're basically growth genes, right? But these are tightly regulated. Right. And in cancer, basically what cancer is, you know, like, if you boil it down, is like unregulated, you know, like, expansion of tissue, of spread of tissue that is not regulated anymore. So basically the idea was that there's certain cancers where the oncogene is turned on the on state. And then they found this whole other bunch of genes that were, like, tumor suppressor genes, right? So these were genes that were normally involved in, DNA repair, making sure that the genetic code is passed between cells with fidelity. When these things are broken down, you know, the rate of mutation goes up, and, you know, your chances of getting a mutation in the oncogene goes up very much high. So that was, like, a big insight that kind of, like, was very important. And the first way this was used was in a drug called imatinib for a blood cancer called chronic myelogenous leukemia. And that's recognized as the first targeted treatment in 1991. And then after that, you know, like, the floodgates opened because they figured out what the deal is. So, you know, you'd be like, okay, how do they even find out these things, right? So it's kind of interesting, right? So, you know, Ron, you know that you have a genetic code and it's in every cell you have, right? Like, it was in the ova and the sperm that, you know, at the time of conception, but it's in every skin cell, every, like covering of the bladder cell, every cell in your body has the same genetic code, right? So how is it that same genetic code, most of it is also preserved in the cancer cells, yet the cancer, goes so off kilter, like it does, you know, it proceeds to conspire to kill you, right? And it's the same genetic code with only a few changes, right? And the explanation for that is that what happens is that your genetic code is translated into proteins, right? So just imagine, the way to think about this is that you have a 1,000-page book, right? And that book only gives you like 200 recipes, right? So you may have heard of like ATCG, you know, those, that's the genetic code, right? Like, but actually most of it is like, doesn't turn into proteins, right? The way the body turns the genetic code into action is through proteins. At least that's the limited way to kind of think, the easier way to kind of think about it, right? So if you map up all the proteins, right, and you look at different cancers and see like, okay, is there a difference in the protein expression or how they're, you can identify the pathways that are going off kilter. And then once you know the pathways, then you know the targets on the pathways that, okay, this pathway is this chemical going into this chemical, and I can stop it by putting a roadblock on this chemical by, you know, making a molecule that floats around in your blood, goes to that chemical and like neutralizes it so it doesn't carry on the next step. You can stop cancer in the tracks. So that's the theory. So they start working on this, and I think the next big thing which they came across was that they figured out in skin cancer, 50% of them had a mutation called BRAF, right? BRAF. And they found out that, you know, like a person who, skin cancer, you know, just to kind of back up, was notoriously difficult to treat with radiation or chemotherapy. There's this trial that happened in 2000, I believe. I may be wrong, so don't quote me on it. But basically, they tried one drug called temozolomide, a chemotherapy, versus 8 drugs. And they found that, you know, they were equally effective. So basically telling you that none of them were effective, right? So yeah. they had to kind of think out of the box. And once they figured out that, hey, half of skin cancer is actually just this BRAF being activated all the time, they made a pill for it. And, you know, they figured out that, okay, now it's working. Like you target, you find the target, you make a pill for it, you take it, and you can stop cancer in the track at least for some time, right? And that this opened the floodgates. Then after that, the big risk, the big successes were in lung cancer, where they figured out that, you know, like there's a mutation called EGFR, right? So this is in around 15% of lung cancer. If you're Asian, if you're a woman, if you're a non-smoker, that it goes up to like 30% perhaps. They found out that you could target this with pills, you know. And it's like one of those things, you know, you have like capitalism and industry working. Like the first pill that comes out is like, you know, marginally effective, you know, can slow cancer but not reverse it, right? And then, you know, you go 2-3 years, they'll make a better mousetrap and even better mousetrap, to the point now that, you know, like a person can come in with stage 4 cancer. And you can see that their brain has multiple spots with cancer in it, and they have cancer up and down their body, but they turn out to have this mutation or other mutations like it. Right now, they've figured out 7 different mutations that you can target with pills. Like, there's another mutation called ALK. And if you look at the data for it, like, if you're on the pill, you know, the chances are that you're going to be alive and cancer-free for 7 years, as long as you stay on the pill. You know, so really remarkable stuff, you know, targeted treatment. And, you know, I think we have just made a lot of progress in many different cancers with this targeted treatment.
Interesting topic, the advances in cancer treatment with personalized medicine and immunotherapy is our topic today on the Central Care Cancer Center Talk of Emporia on this Friday. Dr. Ali Wazir, medical oncologist and hematologist with us. We'll be back with segment number 2 right after this. KVOE AM 1400, 96.9 FM. Ron Thomas hosting the Friday edition of the Talk of Emporia. This is the July Central Care Cancer Center Talk of Emporia with Dr. Ali Wazir, medical oncologist and hematologist, Central Care Cancer Center, located right here in Emporia, conveniently at 1401 West 12th. Please log on to cccancer.com for more information, or you can call 342-1117 Central Care Cancer Center. And today's topic, an interesting one, the advances in cancer treatment with personalized medicine and immunotherapy. Well, Dr. Wazir, let's talk about immunotherapy and maybe some breakthroughs and how does immunotherapy work in fighting cancer?
Yeah, so this is very interesting, right? So before this, we were talking about like targeted, like specific cancers, which, to be honest, are a small percentage of cancers that have certain mutations that you can target with a pill by, you know, utilizing, you know, proteomics and like recognizing different pathways and stuff. This is a totally different concept. So bear with me, Ron, but like the way to think about this is the following, right? Like, what in your body is the closest to cancer? Like, what organ or what thing in your body behaves in the most similar fashion to cancer? You know, it's a counterintuitive kind of thing to think about, right? But if you think about it, the thing that is the closest to cancer is your immune system, right? Because, and why would I say that? Like, because your immune system has like this kind of deal of like immortality, right? Like there are cells that will, you have a stem cell that's kind of like this ghost cell in your bone marrow, and this can produce like 5 billion white cells, which look exactly the same, have the same genetic code, do the exact same thing, and but the difference is it's tightly regulated. Like it's, you know, it has stops and balances. But it does, you know, it does depend on this ability to produce a large quantity of cells. You know, like it can produce 200 million red cells, for example. It can replace every red blood cell every 90 days. It can replace every platelets every 7 days. In a 5-hour period, it can often push out like 5 billion white cells of different types, right? There'll be a white cell that was, you know, will only attack tissues that are infected with viruses. There'll be a white cell that will affect only tissues that are infected with a fungus. There are cells, eosinophils, that will only fight tissues that are affecting parasites. So, you know, like scientists were looking at this for many years, you know. And, you know, if you look at this, the first time this actually came up was like in the 40s, you know, like very long ago, where they kind of like for the first time they noticed that people with lung cancer, if they had pneumonia, right, at the same time in the same spot, they tended to live longer than the people who did not.
Really?
So that was their like insight, you know. Again, in the end of the day, it was a fatal disease back then, but they noticed this thing that like, okay, if you have a cancer and an infection at the same time, sometimes, you know, your body's immune system, for some reason, starts fighting the cancer, right? So they knew that the immune system was definitely capable of fighting the cancer, but there's something stopping it, right? And then they figured out that there are diseases that children can get where their immunity is compromised, right? Like their immune system isn't working. And probably this the most in-the-face kind of example of this is like HIV, right? You get a virus that targets a certain part of your immune system. Because of that decreased immunity, now you have an increased risk of certain cancers, such as Kaposi sarcoma, such as Hodgkin's disease, right? I mean, there are certain cancers that we cause them AIDS-defining, right? Like, if you get that cancer, it means that you may have, like, an HIV infection. So this idea of, like, immunity and cancer was well-known for many years. But, you know, there's a lot of, like, false starts and, like, no one was able to crack the code. Like, no one knew, like, why is it that you're, you know, immune system that is so good at like knowing what's self and what's not self, right? Like you have these white cells, T helper cells going all over your body. They're checking every tissue in your body every minute. Is this a part of Ron or is this a bacteria or is this a fungus? And it figures it out and it kills that bacteria, kills that fungus every minute of the day. Why is it that when it comes across a cancer cell, it can't do that, right? I mean, and some of these cancer cells, they don't even look like the tissue they came from, right? They look like it came from outer space. They're so differentiated, right? And, you know, this is just false starts, different things were tried, you know, a viral vectors, this and the other thing, nothing worked. And finally, there's this boy from Texas, born in Alice, Texas, you know, and trained afterwards. He went to Scripps in California. Then I believe he trained in Berkeley. And then he ended up in MD Anderson. So a doctor, but, you know, a basic science doctor, you know, so, you know, a real doctor, I would call him, right? Who works in a lab and, you know, and his name is James Allison. And he discovered on white cells that there is this receptor called CTLA-4, right? CTLA-4. And he figured out that if you can manipulate this receptor, block this receptor, it can affect your body's response to cancer. And this led to the development of what a drug widely used nowadays called Yervoy, which blocks the CTLA-4 receptor. And that was the first drug to show that it made a difference in melanoma. Before this, everything else we tried in melanoma never showed any survival advantage or, you know, a noticeable survival. But this was for the first time you had patients who had advanced melanoma. You gave them one drug, and a small subsection of them, their cancer went into remission, or like they had like long-term control of their cancer. And this was just a complete change, you know. And he discovered this thing in 1995, but it took around 10 years for the drug to be developed and for people to realize how important this was. And he ended up getting the Nobel Prize for Physiology and Medicine in 2018, I believe. So that was the drug he discovered. There's a Japanese doctor, Dr. Honjo, Tasuka Honjo, I believe his name is. You know, if I'm wrong, that's, you know. But he discovered another pathway, same deal, where you basically block a pathway and now your immune system can recognize cancer cells. So what it is that the cancer cells basically use the signaling system in your body to kind of show the body that it's just a normal part of, you know, like the body. Mm-hmm. And you block the signal. You give them a infusion of antibodies that goes to this signal and blocks it, right? And now your immune system all of a sudden can attack this. And this has been completely revolutionary in cancer. Like some cancers, it has changed it in such a dramatic fashion that it's not the same disease anymore. Like melanoma used to be a disastrous disease, yeah. You know, like where you had like florid growth and everything. And now a person can come in with stage 4 melanoma and you'll be like, you know what? There's a 60% chance you'll be alive, even though right now you have melanoma cells in your brain. And same for lung cancer, you know, like, you know, it's a little more modest, but, you know, lung cancer used to be stage 4, a disease that would kill you in 6 months, right? And now it's not unusual to have patients alive, like 3 years out, 4 years out, 5 years out, right?
Yeah.
And the good thing about immunotherapy, the reason it makes it so powerful is that it's agnostic. It's kind of like traditional chemotherapy, right? Like, doesn't matter whether you have this pathway activated or that pathway activated, because it's relying on another part of your body. As long as you have a competent immune system and you can somehow nudge this immune system to attack the cancer, you know, it's more powerful than any chemotherapy, because unlike chemotherapy, like, which stays in your body only for a certain time, like 1 day or 2 days, right? After that, you pee it out, it's gone, right?
Yeah.
This one stays in your body. Like, once you're Once your immune system is activated and fights the cancer, like, let me tell you this, like, every cancer doctor right now will have a story where they'll be like, oh, we got a patient, he had this widespread cancer, and like, he was ready for hospice, right? And he got one dose of immunotherapy, and that's all we could give him. And now, you know, he's riding his bike, and he's... So those kind of miraculous things only were possible with immunotherapy. Again, you know, like, we have to temper our expectations and be a little realistic.
Sure.
You know, these sort of cases are what are called super responders, right? But, you know, I don't think any doctor will disagree. The most cynical doctor will agree that this was a sea change in certain cancers, like melanoma and renal cancer. Like, it completely changed how we think about these diseases, what to expect with these diseases, how to live with these diseases. With immunotherapy.
Pretty impactful.
Absolutely. And, you know, the story doesn't stop, you know, because now they started looking for other pathways, you know. So we talked about CTLA-4, we talked about PD-L1, there's LAG-1, there's TAG-2, you know, which they've tried for the last couple of years to target. They've also decided that, okay, how about we skip the step where we, you know, hope for the immune system to fight the cancer. How about we just take T cells, which are the cells that fight cancers, and start growing them up in vats in the lab and, like, injecting that directly into the patient. And that treatment has also, like, kind of, like, taken off, and that's called CAR T therapy. And we are fortunate because this is offered at in multiple locations in Kansas City, and we have good relationships with most of them. And they have been, like, remarkable in multiple, like, especially blood cancers, such as, you know, like, lymphomas and multiple myeloma and leukemias. You know, like, CAR T therapy has been like a godsend, you know. Like, it has made things possible that we never thought could be possible. You know, patients who went through four lines of chemotherapy and, you know, are at their last leg, and you just give them, you know, you just take them to the hospital and take some of their cells and take them to a lab and grow 2 million of them and bring them back in the hospital and put these machines in, which are engineered to kill cancer cells. And, you know, that's it. Like one dose and, you know, their cancer is in remission, is in cure. I mean, it's really remarkable stuff.
Fascinating.
Like, yeah.
Dr. Ali Wazir, medical oncologist, hematologist, Central Care Cancer Center here in Emporia. We've been talking about personalized medicine and immunotherapy. Stay tuned. We are back with more right after this. KVOE AM 1400, 96.9 FM. Ron Thomas hosting the Central Care Cancer Center July edition of the Talk of Emporia here on a Friday. We are joined by Dr. Ali Wazir, medical oncologist and hematologist, Central Care Cancer Center. Please log on to cccancer.com or stop by 1401 West 12th at Emporia. You can call 342-1117, Central Care Cancer Center. Today's topic, interesting. Advances in cancer treatment with personalized medicine and immunotherapy. And much progress has been made here with Dr. Wazir. And by the way, you can listen to all of our past programs online at kvoe.com in the audio vault. Well, Dr. Wazir, what kind of current limitations and challenges do we still have and face with personalized medicine and immunotherapy?
Yeah, well, I mean, there are a lot of, you know, these are powerful drugs in the end of the day, and they can have, like, very serious side effects, you know, because, you know, you're kind of, like, you know, affecting very basic systems in your body, you know, so definitely very humbling, these drugs, you know. Like, for example, with immunotherapy, the list of side effects that are possible, again, majority of patients do not have any major side effects, you know, but the possible side effects are endless, right? Like your immune system hasn't read the book. It can do whatever it wants, right? So, you know, you do have, you know, patients who get immunotherapy. And so nowadays, immunotherapy is even approved for many conditions that are, like, curable, right? Like you had cancer, you got surgery, you know, you're cancer-free, but, you know, you're getting immunotherapy to prevent cancer from coming back, right? So that's... you know, that's not a stage four setting. That's not like something, yeah. You know, like, or there the stakes are different, right? And you can have like life altering or like severe side effects that are irreversible, right? Like, you know, we have had patients, which is rare, but, you know, they develop type 1 diabetes, for example, exposed to immunotherapy, you know. And there's one patient I remember in training, you know, she had MS, you know, and she somehow, you know, someone gave her immunotherapy and she had a terrible relapse with the MS that made her quadriplegic, you know. So these sort of like horror stories can happen. So you have to be humble. You have to be vigilant. You need to discuss with the patient everything that's possible so they can make informed decisions. And more important than that, they can let you know early on so, you know, you can kind of intervene before the damage is done kind of deal. So for immunotherapy, absolutely, you have to be very careful. And for targeted therapy, again, you know, because it's such a plethora of different drugs, you know, like, and there are new drugs coming down the pipeline all the time, and they can have the most oddball side effects, like things that, you know, they never teach you at medical school, right? Like, I remember there's this one drug, it just got approved actually last year, you know, we don't use a lot of it. But because it affects certain types of protein called, you know, heat shock proteins, you know, like taking the drug, you can have like fevers, you know. There's another drug where you can have hypoxia. Like literally one of the side effects is that you take a pill and it drops your oxygen levels in your body somehow, right? Oh, so you can have very oddball side effects and you need to roll with the punches because, you know, again, you know, the good thing is that, you know, we're all learning together at this time, more or less. You know, the trials, you know, you have to kind of like listen to the experts and listen to the people who's, you know, had a 1 year ups, had 1 year or so to kind of like learn how to deal with the side effects of the drugs. So for the oncologist, it's a lot of work because, you know, they have to listen to a lot of lectures, a lot of experts, a lot of everything. And they have to get used to the drugs themselves as well, to give it and how to deal with the side effects. And to, like, again, you know, communicate with the patients how their life will be with the drug. So absolutely big challenges ahead. But, you know, we're very fortunate that we live in a time where we actually have these options to kind of like deal with. And, you know, the challenge is part of the job, and, you know, we just have to kind of learn how to deal with it.
Are these options that you present to your patients?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, again, you know, you're limited by time a little bit. So, you know, what I like to do with my patients when I'm explaining, like, let's say immunotherapy, is I give them the broad idea. I was like, look, this is the drug, this is how it works, right? It's taking off like one of the bridles of your immune system. Now your immune system can do a whole number of things. And then I just kind of go over my own experience of like what a bad side effect would look like, what a minor side effect would look like. But, you know, you can, it's not simply possible of going through every possible side effect.
Sure.
You know, the lists, you know, spans 100. So what you try to do is like you tell them, like, you give them the common flavors, and you kind of, you know, you kind of like educate them in the sense that they know that anything that is off, they need to let us know early on, right? So, you know, that's the way I do it. I don't know how other oncologists do it, but like I try to give them like an idea, at least with immunotherapy, of how it works and like what to expect when the immune system, you know, decides to do something off, and what are the symptoms that you can expect from it. For targeted therapy, it's a little easier, right? Because in that one, you have, you know, a person, you know, like whenever a drug is developed, like there's a list of side effects, and you know the percentages of like, this is the chance of this happening, this is the chance of that happening. And, you know, the drug themselves in their, in the prescription paper will tell you like, what is the monitoring? Do they need an EKG? Because it can affect the heart. Do they need a liver test? Do they need a kidney test? Do they need this test? Do they need a urine test? So that is kind of like a little more easy because the list of side effects are smaller, right? So you can educate them pretty well about a certain drug.
Personalized medicine and immunotherapy, interesting topic today, and we learned a lot with Dr. Ali Wazir, as we generally do here on our monthly edition of the Central Care Cancer Center Talk of Emporia. We're fortunate to have high-quality cancer care right here in Emporia at 1401 West 12th. Again, log on to cccancer.com or call Central Care Cancer Center 342-1117. Again, located at 1401 West 12th. Good conversation here this morning, Dr. Wazir. We look forward to having you back next month.
Absolutely, Ron. Thanks for having me.
Dr. Ali Wazir, Central Care Cancer Center. Our July Talk of Emporia with Central Care Cancer Center here on KVOE, live and local.